You know, if you look at what's been, if you've been following the news and you've been looking at what's going on in Ukraine, actually, it's your head's got to be spinning. It's just an incredibly tense and troubling situation. And Revolution newspaper recently wrote, "People are being lied to on a massive scale about what's going on in Ukraine." Yes, that's right. The masters of deception are lying once again. Okay, they're actually out there spinning their web. They're being trained. People are being trained to think uncritically and to identify with the interests and the rulers of the United States. And it's a very dangerous situation because there's a hair trigger confrontation between imperialist powers concentrated in Ukraine, but in other parts of the world as well. We really have to get people to stop thinking like Americans and start thinking about humanity, starting from humanity as a whole and looking for the truth, bringing it out. All right, and joining us to talk about all this is a writer for Revolution newspaper, and I'll get my speaking voice down as we go along. Okay, Alan Goodman. Alan, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Michael. It's always great to be here.
Great, man. Well, let's jump into this because we're going to stuff a lot into 20 minutes or so. So, you know, the Ukraine. It's been just like amazing how quickly, out of nowhere, it just jumped out. It developed. Now it's got the attention of the world on there. You know, and there's all kinds of, you know, just back and forth and all kinds of web spinning and all this about the dynamics involved in the situation with all the imperialist powers involved. Each side claiming to be taking the high road and being morally correct and so on. So let's kick this around to start this off. What are the actual overall dynamics in motion here?
Well, I actually think it might be worth pulling back to what are we being told are the actual dynamics and then contrasting them to the real dynamics.
Because
we are just being bombarded, and, you know, I'm following this closely, reading the statements from Obama and Kerry and all the different officials of the U.S., of all political stripes, and they're all formulating it as there's two things going on here. One is the United States cannot stand by and watch while the territorial integrity of another nation is abused or disrespected or trampled on. And the other is that the United States is motivated by and driven by the aspirations of the people of the Ukraine. And so step one is, and, you know, we need to really expose the hypocrisy behind this, and we've been doing that. You know, those two things have nothing to do with what the United States is doing in Ukraine. And in fact, you know, as we've been posing at revcom.us, if you're looking for a country that's trampled on the territorial integrity of other nations, look no further than the United States, which has an unparalleled record for this, and we need to dig that record up. And then I think we can get into, you know, what is actually driving this, and what is driving it just is the maintenance and enforcement of the world of horrors that your previous guest, Herbert Sauper, right, was talking about. Hubert Sauper was talking about, you know, the system that grinds up people's lives and crushes their spirits literally all around the world. And that is essentially what is being enforced when the U.S. and, from its side, Russia, and then the various other reactionary forces involved are fighting over who is going to have the upper hand in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that, you know, it might be worthwhile even just talking a little bit about this hypocrisy question because, you know, it's very heavy. When I looked at what was in Revolution newspaper and just the listing of all the various times that the U.S. has intervened and just stomped all over other countries, other peoples, this is an incredibly, I mean, it really strikes you deep. To get a sense of how deep that is, you know, how frequent that was and how devastating it was to whole peoples.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if I can just share the experience, this is what it's like when you write for Revolution or RevCom. You know, you go look up these things and they're always worse than you realized. You know, starting from the glorious beginnings of the U.S. empire, the genocide of the Native Americans and the enslavement of African people. And then you've got, you know, the war against Spain. By the way, every one of these things has been justified with an utter lie. The United States didn't say we're going to war against Spain because we're an emerging imperialist nation and we need an empire to contend with other empires, to generate super profits on which we can build up a powerful military and contend around the world. No, they didn't tell people that. the radicals tried to tell people that, but you know, there was always, remember the Maine, you know, the Tonkin, the Gulf of Tonkin incident. Someone else always attacked us first or abused us first, real, imagined, or distorted. And those were never the real reasons behind these things. So, you know, you're referring to an article that we ran, and it's, all this is available at revcom.us. By the way, I really encourage your listeners to tweet some of these articles around, because we've got to break through some of the, you know, BS going on. But, yeah, the article is called The U.S. Empire Was Built on That, Trampling on Other Nations. And I, you know, look up any of these incidents, what the United States did in the Philippines. They killed 600,000 Filipinos to establish U.S. colonial domination of the Philippines. They killed millions of people in Indochina and carried out, you know, terrible war crimes. And, you know, it really does connect with what your previous guest was talking about. I mean, if, yes, you out there listening to me on the radio right now, look at the label inside your clothes. You know, look at where those bananas you're eating came from, or everything else about our lives in America is built on an empire that was established through the most horrific, you know, to say trampling on the integrity of other people is really putting it mildly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the compulsion to continue that empire. That's why the rulers of the United States, let's not identify with them, the rulers of the United States cannot sit by, from their perspective, and see a country that is a natural gas transit point from Russia to Western Europe. I think 30% of Germany's gas comes from Russia through Ukraine into Germany. And a substantially developed industrial and agricultural economy in Ukraine, and cannot just sit by and let their rivals, you know, move in and get an upper hand in all or part of that country.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's dig into this a little bit more, because, you know, the way it comes out still, I mean, okay, they talk about territorial protecting the sovereignty of the Ukraine, and that's that you've been speaking to, and you've been pointing out the hypocrisy involved in all that. There's also arguments that have been broached around oligarchs versus Democrats, and that there's this, you know, that we're just, that the U.S. is just coming in and they're just trying to, you know, this is the dynamic that's in operation there. And of course, everyone wants to side with the Democrats, or they say that the, you know, that there's also, well, there's other arguments we can get into as well, because I want to dig into a little bit this question of natural gas and oil, because there is a certain argument being advanced there, not just by the imperialists, but also by people in general, in terms of explaining what's going on. So let's talk about both of those a little bit. What about this oligarchs versus Democrats?
Well, I'm tempted to say, what's the difference between an oligarch and a Democrat?
Okay.
It's a riddle. The answer is, whoever's aligned with the interests of U.S. imperialism is a Democrat. Never mind, you know, that they may be an ultra-nationalist with, you know, close ties to basically, you know, movements and forces in the Ukraine ruling class that allied with the Nazis and continue to promote a lot of that stuff. And, you know, just, I mean, my emphasis will be on, you know, the role and exposing the role and nature of U.S. imperialism here. Mm-hmm. But Russia's got its own motives. You know, the forces it's backing are no better. But, the essence of it is there are contradictions in the Ukraine ruling class. Ukraine is a capitalist country. It's a country of 45 million people. Like I said, it, you know, has a developed agriculture and industry. The people who rule it, you know, again, they're capitalists now, you know, in different forms and with different styles and so on, but the essence of it is they're capitalists. I mean, we can go into that more if you want to. The oil thing is a big deal. I think it's widely misunderstood. I don't know if you wanted to...
Yeah, go there.
You know,
go ahead.
You raised a number of different questions, so, mm-hmm. you know, maybe we could break those down. Did you...
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Was that satisfactory on the oligarchs versus Democrats?
Yes, it was.
Well,
especially
the
riddle.
And also, you know, and who are forces for democracy when it comes to respecting the interests of the people of Ukraine? Well, there's about as many people, roughly speaking, you know, with Russian flags in eastern Ukraine guarding a statue of Lenin. And I do have to clarify, that statue does not today represent what Lenin really represented, and the people guarding it, I don't know who they are or what their motivation is, but, you know, you can, I use the example when I was talking to you the other day. You know, 40,000 Ku Klux Klansmen marched down Pennsylvania Avenue in 1925. What did that prove? Were they the forces of democracy? Was, you know, should that have been the basis on which people looked at, you know, what represented the interests of people in the United States or the world, much less the world? Anyway, you can't judge a situation by whether or not any particular political agenda has thousands or tens of thousands or even tens of millions of people in the streets. We learned that bitter lesson again in Egypt when 30 million people were wrong when they went into the streets, essentially orchestrated or at least under the wing of the political agenda of the U.S. and, you know, the military in Egypt to demand the fall of the Morsi government. But so that, you know, the oligarch Democrat, you have to get beneath the surface, as you used to say, and understand what real interests and agendas are at work here, and maybe that does lead us up to oil.
Well, let's jump into oil, and we'll have to time ourselves on this because we have about maybe 10 minutes left, so a little bit less. So why don't we jump into oil, and then I have one other big question, so let's measure it out that way, all right?
Okay. I mean, you and I were talking, I was interviewed on another show recently, and the host was making an argument that what is driving the really dangerous conflict between the U.S. and Russia, you know, in Ukraine, what's driving that is oil company profits, and that the oil companies are justifying fracking, which is, a lot of your listeners are probably familiar and understand this, but it's, you know, a terribly, terribly environmentally destructive process of squeezing yet more, oil out of poor Mother Earth, who, you know, capitalism has already, you know, devastated so badly, and building this, you know, dangerous, Keystone, environmentally disastrous Keystone pipeline from Canada, and all this rhetoric about energy sufficiency for the United States. Well, yes, the oil companies will make obscene profits off of all this, and that is part of the picture, but that's not what's driving things. Imperialism, you know, going back to the world that we were talking about in the beginning and that Hubert Sauber was describing some of its effects, that system relies on control of oil. Modern militaries run on oil. I don't have the statistic in front of me, but the United States has military bases in well over 100 countries on this planet. And they all run on oil, and so do the militaries of every other country, and so do the economies in every country in this oil-addicted capitalist imperialist world. And so control of oil is, it's not mainly or just a source of obscene super profits for the oil companies, although again, that's a, you know, a critical part of the economy of world imperialism. But even more fundamentally, it's, you know, it's geostrategic. It's why the Middle East has been the center for so much conflict, because it's been the main source of oil for Europe. And so, you know, that's what's going on with the oil thing. Did you want to pursue that, or
question. Yeah, I have another question. I'm sure people can keep going to revcom.us, and a lot of this will be eventually be explored in different ways on that site. It's really a worthwhile, very worthwhile site to go to understand all this. And that brings me up to this question, which is, you know, we've talked about, and it talks about it in Revolution, and you've mentioned it a couple times, that this is what's happening in the Ukraine is not only happening with an impact on the immediate thing that's going on in the immediate world, but actually has the potential for being presenting a great danger to the world. And I wanted to talk about what that great danger is, but then also talk about this other point, which is that we're not just being lied to, but we're also being trained in how to look at the world today in terms of what the press is doing, what the U.S. imperialists are saying, and the link between that and this great danger.
Well, one dimension of imperialism, you know, along with the vicious super exploitation of people in the third world and all the horrors that brings, is sharp contention between different imperialist blocs and powers. And, you know, without going into what blocs those are, there are forces that are, you know, from the perspective of the U.S. as, you know, the godfather of world imperialism today, there are forces that are stepping on its turf, emerging regional powers. But, you know, I think what you were pointing to is the key thing is how are people being trained to think and how should people be thinking? And I was thinking back to, you know, the experience of many people in my generation who, I remember I went to my first teach-in on the Vietnam War, and I thought the war was right because we, you know, look, if we're trying to protect democracy, isn't that a good thing? And then I went to the teach-in and I found out who these, so, you know, who these forces of democracy that, quote unquote, we were supporting, and I stopped, you know, eventually I changed my mind, not just about the Vietnam War, but about, you know, I came to see a whole system of imperialism, and also connections were forged in that era between, you know, the black liberation struggle, the women's liberation movement, the struggles around the world against imperialism, and the, and a revolutionary movement emerged that did see imperialism as a global system. And you know, you had a, even more broadly in society, you had the phenomenon of people identifying with the struggle of people around the world against imperialism. Now, we don't have the same kind of positive forces in the world today. You know, we don't have socialist China like we had back then. That was a, an inspiration and a bedrock. We didn't, we don't have the Vietnamese people's, struggle, which was an inspiring and a real liberation struggle. But that doesn't mean that, you know, those same basic lessons don't apply, and that we do have, you know, if we have to both cut through this obscene hypocrisy about we're supporting democracy around the world and we can't stand by and let the territorial integrity of some other nation be disrupted. But we also need to bring forward an understanding that this all comes from a system, and there's another dimension to imperialism, which is that imperialism is the era of revolution, and an era when, you know, the world revolution is more than ever in history, is an integral process. So, you know, this is all, I think, what our responsibility is to bring forward. And again, you know, you mentioned it. You'll find resources both to learn about this and to share online at RevCom. For example, if I can just plug one, because you'll find, if you go straight to RevCom.us, you'll find a link right to this stuff. But, you know, we've got some, I guess you could call them polemics up there, like from the genocide of the Native Americans to drone strikes in Yemen. The rulers of the United States are the last people on earth to talk about respecting the territorial integrity of others. And stop thinking like Americans, stop thinking about humanity. So these are things that we need to really be getting out there. I don't know if that answered what you were...
Yeah, it does. It does. Although in a couple minutes, I'd like to actually talk about this a little bit more for a couple minutes. You know, this idea that the danger that's posed by the situation today, and what is the danger? There's actually a danger not only in the dynamics of the situation itself, but also in this thing of people not breaking through and cutting through all the lies and all the distortion that's out there. And this term, in terms of how they're being trained to look at the world today, and it does mean something in terms of what could possibly, what's not just what's in the, you know, going on today, although that's extremely important, but also what could possibly develop in the future.
Well, these are things to study and understand better, but I guess I would argue against, for example, during the Cold War, there were people saying, you know, well, I mean, that's not a good example. But the point is, and I think, whether or not this situation in the Ukraine escalates and, you know, evolves from economic contention to a military, you know, a more widespread, high-level military confrontation that even draws in other powers, or whether or not it simmers the way it is. In either case, you know, on both sides, or and in any eventuality in between, on both sides, this is about perpetuating a world of horrors. And we need to really continue to bring that out to people. What are the real stakes? And then, you know, then people will be prepared if the situation does take a drastic turn, but they'll also be prepared if it doesn't. And, you know, again, ultimately, this is about the clash in the Ukraine between reactionary powers is about maintaining and enforcing and fighting over who's going to control the world of horrors. And our perspective can't be, how do we kind of, you know, support the lesser of evil or hope it doesn't, you know, get out of control or something like that, but how do we get rid of this whole system?
Exactly.
And again, you will find answers to that and ways to go about that at revcom.us.
All right, Alan, thank you very much for joining us today.
All right, thanks for having me. Take care.
Take care, man. Bye now.
Bye.
You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we have just been talking with Alan Goodman, writer for Revolution Newspaper, about what the hell is going on in the Ukraine and why it's so important for us to understand the truth about this situation. All right, I want to thank my assistant producer today, Henry Carson. I also want to thank my assistant producer who helped with the interview with Hubert Salper, Annie Day, and I want to thank my production assistant, Jeff Pryor, my engineer, Teddy Robinson, and all of you for tuning in. If you want to write to me, you can at michaelslate@redfuture.com. Again, that's michaelslate@redfuture.com. And I want to let people know that every Monday, you know, at 7 p.m., there's a Cosmos viewing party. Celebrate science and the series Cosmos, a space-time odyssey at Revolution Books with a group of like-minded people who are digging into science and how the world really is, right? So you can be there at 7 p.m. That's 5726 Hollywood Boulevard every Monday night. All right, we're going to go out now with my favorite song in the world right now, which is the Douglas Street Shuffle. So, Teddy, let it rip, man.
First automobile was patented way back in 1886.
The car show started on KPFK a few years later, 1973.
I'm Art Gould.
And I'm Dave Coons. Join us each Saturday morning at 9 for a comprehensive look at the world of cars.
Safer, cleaner, more interesting. Never in history has there been a more significant and exciting time in the evolution of the automobile.
We give you a glimpse at the future, but also like to look back at the past.
Old or new, we bring it all to you on The Car Show, Saturdays from 9 to 10, right here on KPFK.
Hi, this is David Lindley, and this is KPFK 90.7 Los Angeles, 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, and 99.5 in Ridgecrest, China Lake. Heard worldwide at kpfk.org.